Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
Let's say all roads lead back to that particular property and its current situation relative to the competition in the market.
Before we get into today's episode, I want to offer you a free service and a free gift. Yes, a free gift. You're a loyal Best Ever listener. You deserve free gifts. And it's from our best ever partner, Secure Pay One, the landlord helper. So are you a landlord or investor who's self-managing? Well, if you're self-managing, is that the best way to scale your business? And are you fulfilled by self-managing, or would you rather be doing other stuff with your time? Like, I don't know, scaling your business, scaling your portfolio, making more money, bringing more rentals, rental income coming in because you're acquiring more properties. If you want to scale, if you're not getting fulfilled by self-managing, then here comes the free service, here comes the free gift. Linda Liberatore, you know her, episode 714, I interviewed her about her best ever advice, talked to her about her company, which is the solution to your problem, Secure Pay One, the landlord helper. They handle the phone calls, they handle the rent collections, they handle late payment reminders, they handle the lease violation notices, everything from the text messages, reminders, all the way to collecting the ACH payments. Linda's team will help you scale your business, whether you got 500 units or even a handful of units. Go to mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. That's mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. They're going to give you a free 30-minute goal strategy session. They'll give you free setup and the first 30 days free. mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. Again, if you are self-managing and you're not fulfilled by self-managing, and you agree that there's a better way to scale your business, scale your investments, then go to mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. Take Linda and her team up on their generous offer of giving you a trial and a strategy session to see if it's right for you. mylandlordhelper.com/Joe.
Best ever listeners, how you doing? Welcome to the best real estate investing advice ever show. I'm Joe Fairless. This is the world's longest running daily real estate investing podcast. We only talk about the best advice ever. We don't get into any fluff. With us today, Theo Hicks, and if you're watching on video, you can see Jack the Yorkie is with us today too, in a more active way on my lap. So Jack, how you doing? Theo, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, too. Welcome back. Theo was in Florida, Disney World. He is back, and we got a lot of good things to talk about. In particular, we're going to talk about ways to add value and increase profitability of small multis, and it came from a best ever listener question. So we'll talk about that. Theo, how do you want to kick it off?
I do want to start by giving some updates on what's going on in your business, the good, the bad.
Sure. Let's see. Really, nothing groundbreaking from last time we talked on the show. Just you're continuing to finalize the due diligence on the property we're purchasing in Dallas. We're closing the week of September the 10th.
Okay.
And fortunately, we have a really good team within Ashcroft because I'm actually going on my honeymoon September 1st through the 11th or 12th, maybe. So Frank, my business partner, and you and others have got things covered. That's really it. No major news. I mentioned last week I finished Ninja Selling. I am now reading Commercial Real Estate Mortgages. The author is a previous guest, and I can't recall his name right now. So maybe next week I will, if you remind me, I'll bring the book and I'll give my 2 cents on it so far. I'm about 30% of the way through. Other than that, that's it. What do you got going on?
Well, I have to ask, if you, kind of what you're talking about when you're going on your honeymoon, if you didn't have a team, you probably would have to skip your honeymoon and end up closing out this deal or kind of pass on the deal. You don't need to be involved, definitely in the closing, right?
Yeah, I don't need to be physically present.
Okay.
For the closing. In fact, I don't think we've ever been physically present for any closing. We do it remotely. Hmm. Yeah, I am involved in the closing, looking at the closing statements and things like that. But Frank, my business partner, is also the primary point person on that particular area of the business. So he's got it covered for me while I'm doing the honeymoon.
I was getting lunch with an investor the other day, and he was saying that he's kind of traveling around right now, and he did a closing remotely, and he had to go into like a UPS, and he had like a stack of 100 documents, he had to sign, and then scan them all in, and he said it took forever.
Oh, yeah.
So is I'm going to do the same thing, scan all the documents, because I don't think they have an online signing service that I know of.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll overnight you documents, and you have to sign it and get it taken care of. Yep.
Cool. So on my end, let's see what it is I have. So I've got all my rents. Got all the rents. It's funny, I'm sitting in the airport on the 5th, and for some reason, some of the leases, the rents aren't due until the 5th of the month. And so it says that they have until the 5th. And so obviously they go with the latter date and not the earlier date. And I'm sitting in the airport, getting ready to leave, and one of the residents calls and says, "Hey, did you take my rent yet?" And it's like, "Did I take your rent?" It's like, "Oh, I sent you my debit card number to take my rent." And I'm just like, "Oh, I think she just must have gotten confused based off of the online service they were supposed to use." But no, she didn't send me a check, so I picked it up yesterday.
How did she send you the debit card information?
In an email.
Oh.
I don't know if it was a miscommunication in my end, but I remember she sent it and was like, "I said, why are you sending me your debit card information? You need to buy something?"
Right.
So there's that. And then, I guess something else interesting that happened, I was talking about how, this is actually the same person, she's like the only person I've talked to, she used to call me probably different things that are happening, but she had some drywall fell from the garage under her car, and they put a dent in there, and I took some pictures, and I didn't know how to address it. I didn't know how much it would cost. Based on the way that she was asking me questions about it, and based on the way that she explained the issue to me, it seemed like she just wanted money. Like, she didn't want to actually fix the car herself. And so what I did is I went around and got a bunch of quotes, and then I kind of took the average of the quotes based on the images I sent. So obviously it wasn't 100% correct, because if they went in there and saw that it was a little different, it would have been a different cost. And then I reached out and said, "Hey, you know, here's a couple options we can do. You can either take it in yourself and get it fixed, and then I'll reimburse you, or I got a couple of quotes, here are the quotes, and I can just write you a check for the damages." And she went for that option instead, so I'm pretty sure I saved money doing it that way.
How much did it?
A plus. $195.
$195, and is she signing something?
I have not got it signed, no.
I won't come back for future damages on this? So no, right?
No, the only thing that I have is an email trail.
Okay. And the email, have you paid her?
Yeah.
Okay. Did she sign something that said she received it? Was it a check?
I wrote a check and I put it in her mailbox.
Okay. Probably fine.
If it's not fine, then I'll learn a lesson. I'll definitely hesitate and sign for next time. I remember we even talked about that in one of the episodes, and when I dropped the check, I didn't even think about it. But I've got an email trail, and I guess I'm just set to putting a lot of trust into the president for not, oh, Theo, I went and get it repaired, it ended up costing $5,000, I want more money, or I'm not paying rent ever again, or anything like that. So
I'm sure it'll work out.
Exactly.
We have faith in people.
And then I think besides that, I had a really good conversation with Linda Levatori of Secure Pay One, because she was listening to one of our shows where I was talking about how I was taking over the property and what I was doing to get the rent sent to me and things like that. And our conversation on YouTube is entitled How to Take Over a Property with Tenants, with property management expert Linda Levatori. It's about a 40-minute conversation where we literally went step by step exactly what you want to do from prior to closing to maybe a month after having the property. And so the whole entire process of taking over, and she's been doing this for a long time, and she's constantly through a lot of interesting stories and interesting case studies of how things went wrong. And then most of the conversation was kind of me explaining what I was going through, what I did, and what I did incorrectly. Which is a bit of, I think, one of the most interesting pieces of advice that I'm going to apply moving forward that I didn't even really think about, is to, on like a 6-month, like a yearly basis, have like an application for each individual unit to fill out. Mm-hmm. And you do that to make sure that the people that are on the lease that are living there are actually living there, and that no one else is living there. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of do a little walkthrough with them. So you go to the unit and you walk through with them to kind of check up and see if there's any type of issues that they were talking about. And then something else did it too that I thought was really cool, because I had no idea what to do about taking over a property that's not necessarily like extremely distressed. Like, you don't need to do any mm-hmm. repairs for it to be, you know, habitable or livable or anything like that. But it's also not A property or a B plus property. It's kind of outdated. It's 1950s Technicolor tiles and everything. And so I didn't really know what to do about addressing any kind of maintenance issues. And what she said is you go to each unit and say, what's one thing you want done to your unit? And that way you're not bombarded with a whole list of different repairs to do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're doing something right away that's like adding value to them. So you're kind of getting started on the right foot. And it also will help if you want to increase the rents, kind of what we were talking about. Like, you wouldn't want to just go in there and increase the rents and not add any value, because it's not starting on the right foot. But if you go in there and the first thing you do is improve something that was kind of annoying them, whether it's something small like a cracked window or there's a hole in the wall or a burner on their stove is out. And then if you address that one issue, it's not really kind of what we talked about before, the unexpected, because they're expecting it. So it's not like the ideal way, because I guess it'd be better if you unexpectedly fix something, but you wouldn't really know what it was to fix. So I plan on doing that this month when I go in there to meet everyone and sign new leases. And there was one thing that we want addressed.
When you ask them that one thing and they tell you and then you fix it, a suggestion would be to fix it and then say, and you know what, I noticed that XYZ needed some attention, so we went ahead and fixed that too for you.
There you go.
And then you can pick what that other XYZ thing is. Could be super simple.
I think the only drawback to that strategy, and I'll talk about it when I actually do it, my fear is that they're going to want something like big that costs like thousands of dollars to do. Like, oh, can you replace all my appliances in the kitchen? So I need to word it so that it's like, I'm not saying, you can't respond by saying, I'll repair my entire unit or update my entire unit.
Well, it's a difference. It's a repair.
Yeah.
Anything that needs, one thing that needs repaired or addressed.
So I need to make sure that I word it correctly, but
regardless of how you word it, it's going to be misinterpreted.
And I know.
It doesn't really matter how you word it. You just know what the line is, and you just have to have a conversation with those people who ask for granite countertops and stainless steel appliances.
Exactly. Those are the updates on my...
Congratulations on getting all the rents for it, because I know last week you had what percent?
I think I had 7 or 8 out of 12.
7 or 8 out of 12.
Whatever percentage that is.
Yeah. Well, congrats on that. That's great to hear.
And luckily, most of it was like a mix-up or communication issue. It wasn't like I just didn't hear from them. Mm-hmm. It was they were confused on how to submit the rent online, or they didn't like the fee, and they wanted to mail it, and they didn't know what to check out too, so it was kind of just confusing. So next month, I expect everything to be smoothing. If not, then we'll talk about it on here as a mistake.
Cool. Sounds good.
So I got a question from a listener. His name is Devin, and he asked, what is your experience with charging multifamily residents for assigned parking spaces? It looked as if he had a medium to large sized apartment complex, and he actually had a picture in his question, and it was just newly paved parking lot with just parking spots. And he wanted to know, and what's your experience with just charging for parking? And I guess add an additional layer to the question, maybe you can talk about what are the different parking options that you can do and what are the benefits of doing a carport versus just a regular spot versus constructing a whole brand new parking garage,
mm-hmm.
based on your experience.
Well, I'd say all roads lead back to that particular property and its current situation relative to the competition in the market. Because if you are charging for parking, then there needs to be a demand, right? Supply, demand. There needs to be demand for it. And you also need to be within the market parameters, or you need to be competitive with the rest of the market.
Okay.
Therefore, the first thing I would look at is the current parking situation at the property. I love using the extreme examples to make the point. If you have 100 units and you have 400 parking spots, then you're probably going to be hard-pressed to charge residents for. So you need to look at what type of demand and how special is it to be able to have your own parking spot. Now let's assume that it's a typical apartment community where you have two spaces for every one unit, because that's typically the ratio, at least, that I've come across. Now, a new development, they're looking to decrease that because it's just not needed. People don't drive as much if they're in New York City or if they are in a new development that's most likely close to a bunch of retail and bars and things like that. But let's just assume, typical scenario, for every unit you have two parking spots. Well, if that's the case, then some things I would look at doing is, one, a resident recognition program for longstanding
nice.
Residents. Because what your question, Devin, is ultimately getting at is, can I make more money at the property through the parking situation in some way? So instead of looking at it, can I charge for parking spots, look at what is your number one expense at the property, and it might be tenant turnover. So if you can increase resident retention by giving residents a prime parking spot, and that is very convenient for them, they get their groceries and they can just scoot right into their apartment versus having to go around all these cars and over the curb and stuff. If that increases resident retention, then you now no longer have move-out costs, advertising, marketing costs to get the new resident in there, tenant turnover costs. So it's likely that the $3,000 that it would cost to turn over the unit all in is a greater amount of money than charging $25 for your parking spot in the prime location. So look at it in multiple angles, not just can I charge for the spot. Look at it from a resident retention standpoint and see if that would actually make more sense and that can increase resident retention. But to directly answer your question about my experience charging multifamily residents, well, we do the approach I just mentioned. We built carports and we are building carports. The advantage to building carports versus just charging for a prime spot in front of someone's building is, well, it increases the value of that parking spot, assuming that the area is hit with either really bright hot sun, which Texas is,
yeah.
a lot of hot sun, wind in the north, snow in Texas, hail. So you got a lot of reasons why you want a carport in certain cities. And we charge $35, depending on the property, to do that. And we make 20-25% return on those. So it tends to be a good investment. To give you an example of how many we build on a property, we're planning on building 50 on a 250-unit property, roughly. So that gives you an idea of how many we build.
One per every 5 units.
Yes, one, exactly, one per every 5 units. So we're not building for every parking spot we're building selectively in certain areas where it makes sense.
Yeah, you made a really good point. I never even thought about it that way before, but when you're kind of addressing this specific question of should you charge for parking or kind of what are you going to do next, which is about ways to do to increase your profits, and making sure that if you're doing something, you may be adding more money on one hand. Maybe charging for that might affect your tenant retention, or someone might not want to live there because, oh, well, I can get free parking over here. What would I pay for parking here? You're kind of just thinking about, okay, if I'm going to do something here, will that potentially affect something else? And if you're just kind of thinking about that before you kind of make that decision is a really good point.
Yeah, it's what I try to do with most things. If it's how can we make money on this, well, is there a larger item that we can address to ultimately solve what we're really trying to solve for, which in this case, Devin's talking about just having a better NOI at the property. And one of the things that I always keep in mind, and this is relevant but not directly related, is our number one expense would be taxes. As entrepreneurs and real estate investors, number one expense, taxes. And so often we do all the work on the income of the property, the expenses of the property, but then from our overall tax standpoint, we don't have the right CPAs and tax analysts to identify how can we mitigate our number one largest expense, taxes. Yeah. So.
These are things in perspective about taxes. I was looking at my cash flow calculator the other day to update some things because some of our expenses were lower than what I assumed them to be. And just the property taxes alone are 25%. Of our rents that we come in. I mean, that's just a property tax. That's not like the potential tax that you pay on the income at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I wish there's a way that you could address that, but I think there's a couple things you can do, but not really. You guys gotta kind of bite the bullet on that.
Cost segregation, for sure.
Yeah. I might have, that's so high. It seems like so high. I guess so.
Well, and you can protest too. Cost segregation will just lower your tax basis in general for what you pay or what you realize, but then the actual assessment itself, you could protest depending on where you're at. And we actually did an episode with someone who talked about the appeal process and how to protest.
Yeah, I remember listening to that one. So the main topic is kind of similar to Devin's question about charging for multifamily, but when I read that question, I was kind of thinking of different ways to essentially increase your profits, so either decrease expenses or increase your revenue. We were kind of talking beforehand, and now I'm thinking about it even more. Now, again, you have to think about all these things I'm going to list here. Is this going to have an effect on something else? And we were kind of talking about in regards to time. So, for example, one of the things that I calculated, what we're doing is ways to increase profits on small multifamily properties.
Got it.
And the main thing that I saw on my first property that I bought that was a huge expense was landscaping. So I literally had, people can't see the room, but I had like a strip of grass that was like the size of this room. And the guy was charging me every week, and it was $15 a week for that one. And I'm not sure exactly what that would be out to, but that's $15 times 52 weeks. And I had a payment at the end of the year. So during the year, it seemed like, oh, I'm making all this money. And then at the end of the year, I got this bill for a couple $1,000s. And for that property in particular, if I wanted to mow the lawn myself, it probably would take me 15 minutes to do. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to mow the lawns for my next properties until it becomes so overwhelming or unmanageable, or my time would be worth more spent somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so right now, it takes me an hour to mow those three lawns. And we just did a quick calculation beforehand, and that saves me $2,000 a year. And so that's a profit increase of $2,000, which if you, for these properties in particular, the bank that I use, they didn't use a sales comparison approach. They use the income approach. And so that'd be, you know, $2,000 divided by whatever the cap rate happened to be for an increase in the property values.
That's usually factored in appraisals, how they usually factor in those costs. So I don't know if it would necessarily increase the value of the property, because when the appraisal takes place, they factor it as though how it would be run professionally.
Okay. So they don't look at my actual expenses. They'd be like, okay, well, Theo's managing it himself and Theo's doing the maintenance himself, but we're going to underwrite it as if someone else is doing the maintenance and someone else is doing the property management?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it does not add a value to the property, but I guess it adds $2,000 a year
to your bottom line.
My bottom line.
In exchange for your time.
In exchange for 26 hours of time for $2,000. So, yeah.
So, what is that an hour?
I think it's a little bit under $100 an hour. Let's do an actual calculator.
Okay. $80 an hour. Are you good with that?
I'm good with that. I can't remember if it was your podcast or if it was a blog that I read, but they were talking about, you know, the $10 an hour, $100 an hour, and $1,000 an hour jobs, and as you progress through your business, like you start and your time in the beginning is not worth anything. So it's worth like $10 an hour. It was like what you would pay to do what you were doing or something along those lines. And then as you progress, then your time is worth $100 an hour. And so all those $10 an hour tasks you were doing, you contract all those out because you're losing $9 per every hour spent on those $10 an hour tasks. And then once you become where you're at right now and your time is worth like $1,000 an hour, then even though the contract got those $100 an hour jobs now because then you're losing $900 per hour spent. So right now I think I'm at that $10 an hour job. And so me doing this $80 an hour job, I'm saving $70. At least that's kind of how I'm calculating. Again, as time goes on, if it doesn't...
So you're $10 an hour right now?
Per my property, right. Yes. All right. That's much of my properties.
All right.
That's one thing. And so along the same lines of brainstorming ways to decrease expenses, something else that happened a lot at the last property is like really small like maintenance issues that happen, like the dishwasher would stop working, or last night I got a text and the guy's lock wasn't working. It ended up being completely fine. I assumed that he just like put it in there and to see how it didn't work and they just text me right away, but it ended up working anyways.
Did you have to go over there?
I did not know. But if I would have sent someone over there, it would have been $100, $200 for a 10-minute ordeal. And so I was talking to Marcel about this, and for small maintenance issues that will take like 15, 20 minutes to address, instead of paying our contractor, who have already had him go over there and do a couple things, it's like $100, $200 here and there. Mm-hmm. And based off our maintenance budget, we got $600 a month per property allocated to maintenance. And so I'm going to go over there and address these smaller maintenance issues for a year and then kind of calculate and see how much time I spent there versus how much money I have to be saved. Kind of calculate that dollar per hour, and it's more than $10 an hour, then it aren't going to be saving money. So that's something else that I thought about. A key point on that, I remember I was having some conversation with people at the first conference about this, and kind of the other miscellaneous sisters that I met, and they'll just use YouTube tutorials for kind of everything. Like there's tutorials. Like there's little YouTube videos for fixing anything. And so they'll go in there and just pop, dishwasher's not working, like how to fix dishwasher doesn't drain. And they'll watch like a 2-minute video on how to do that, and then they'll do it themselves. And so kind of leveraging technology and leveraging YouTube to increase your profits, I thought was an interesting approach. It was kind of what led me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Something else, this kind of again goes back to, will this decrease tenant retention, but coin-operated laundry versus just buying a washer and dryer and putting it in there? I calculated the ROI of buying a washer and dryer versus just doing the coin-operated, and fortunately for me, these previous owners actually own these washer and dryers, the coin-operated, so it's 100%. But I know there's some services that charge 50%, so they'll take half of the money that goes in there. So that's another way.
Well, another angle with that is to buy the washer and dryer and then rent it to the resident at a more competitive rate than what they could get at Rent-A-Center. And just keep doing that, and then eventually you'll have it paid for by them.
Mm-hmm.
And then future tenants or future years, it will just be infinite cash flow.
That's a really good idea. Yeah, buy washer dryers and rent to them. I think something else you could do too is just obviously buy the coin-operated washer dryer and do something similar. Or you calculate how much you would charge for the laundry dryer based off like Rent-A-Center or based off how much money it would be to do one load of laundry per week at a laundromat.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Something else, I ran into a guy at my gym and he was talking about this, but apparently there's services out there for duplexes or fourplexes or these smaller multi-units where the water is not broken up per unit. I think he said it costs $75 a month to do, and they do something where they essentially meter the water off to the individual units and then charge the actual residents for the water. And so you get charged for water every 3 months, and so $75 times 3 is $225. And I think our water bills were between $400 and $600. So that's the cost savings right there. And I guess there's one less thing you have to worry about paying off, too.
And that will increase the value of your property. We do that on all of our properties.
Okay.
A RUB program, ratio utility billback system. There are companies out there that facilitate that for you. And the thing to keep in mind is that's an expense that the resident didn't already have. Therefore, it's basically a rent increase of X amount of dollars. So you want to make sure that what's the competition doing? Are they doing it? If not, then are you competitive enough to be able to pull it off and have that increase amount of money that the resident is paying out of pocket on a monthly basis?
And then the last one I have specifically for smaller properties is property management. So it's important, at least from my perspective, figure out how much time I'm spending doing the property management duties per month based on how much money I would be spending on a property manager to make sure that it's worth my time. One other small caveat as to why I think that I'm going to continue to do property management is I'm starting to toy with the idea of actually doing a property management company. So kind of having my own property management company and run my properties and maybe in the future bringing on other people's properties. But that's something that's kind of just thought and voiced in my head based on some conversation I had with a couple of investors. And so that's for smaller properties. If you're interested in a list of ways to increase your profits on larger properties, we've got a document with over 25 multifamily value add opportunities for, you know, simple upgrades up to these more expensive advanced upgrades like building a carport or adding in a daycare center. And so if you want to have that document, you can send an email to info@joefairless and just put multifamily value add opportunities in the subject line and we will send that over to you.
This document, after we went through it and created it, I think it's big, medium, and small multifamily properties because you've got upgrade the light fixtures. You can do that anywhere. But then you have larger stuff like renting out the clubhouse, pet fees, that's any property, assigned parking, we talked about that, upgrade packages for appliances, and some other things that is rarely discussed, but it's truly a great way to add value. Two ways actually come to mind. One is adding a room. Maybe you got a big old one bedroom, but if you can add a wall and make it a two bedroom, what's that look like? And I forget what the second thing was. It's in this document. You can just get the document and then you'll be able to see all 25. So info@joefairless.com and we'll get you that value add multifamily document.
Okay, a couple of our miscellaneous items. So we've got a new Facebook community called the Best Ever Show community. Do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, real quick. Finally, after 3 years of doing this show, we have created a Facebook community for you and the rest of the Best Ever listeners. So you can go to
Facebook search Best Ever Show community.
Best Ever Show community. And the reason why you'll find value there is because we talk about the episodes that launch a lot of times with the guest who was interviewed on the episode, so you can engage with him or her. Additionally, any real estate related questions or topics or even entertaining articles that are related to real estate, like the world's most expensive house recently being for sale and what that would cost to rent out and still cash flow. We talked about that. So go to the Best Ever Show community on Facebook and join the conversation there too.
Other item, 2018 Best Ever Conference.
Yeah, real quick, the conference website will be up today, if not tomorrow, besteverconference.com. The reason why you want to go there now is because we've got early bird tickets. And the early bird tickets will allow you to save $100 on the ticket. And it's for the 2-day event, February 9th and 10th in Denver, Colorado. You'll love it. I'm confident of that. And you can go watch the recap video of last year. The high caliber of attendees who were at the last event and the experience and the level of conversation was what everyone was talking about. And how it was the most highest quality of attendees and conversation out of any conference people have attended. And that's a testament to you, Best Ever listeners, and how freaking intelligent you are, and looking forward to meeting you at the conference if we didn't meet already at the last year's conference.
Awesome. And to wrap it up, we're going to do the review of the week. So if you enjoyed the conversations and are finding value in these conversations, please subscribe on iTunes and leave a review for the opportunity to be the review of the week. This week is from Breathe to Prosper, all the way from Portugal International. And he just said, the best real estate investing advice ever is a great podcast. Joe is a great guy and provides lots of values to listeners. Definitely recommend this podcast.
Wait, and you said he, but we don't know if it's he or she.
You're right. He slash she from Portugal.
Thank you, Breathe to Prosper. Appreciate that feedback and looking forward to reading more on future episodes. So thanks for spending some time with us, Best Ever listeners. Hope you have a best ever weekend and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Are you an investor who self-manages, talks to your residents, collects checks, and handles all the day-to-day tasks? Well, there's a better way, best ever listener, and guess what? That better way is SecurePayOne. SecurePayOne, the landlord helper, will have conversations over the phone with your residents whenever there's an issue, and the residents can pay you directly. So schedule your free trial and 30-minute session today at mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. That's mylandlordhelper.com/Joe. Are you ready to close more deals and officially seal your financial freedom? The Dwellin Show with Ola Dantas discloses the most innovative real estate investing strategies to kickstart your quest to financial freedom. Go listen at www.dwellynn.com/show. That's dwellynn.com/show.